Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And welcome, everybody. If you have been on the cafe for the last 25 minutes, I am still John Pollock and waiting, still maintaining that identity. 25 minutes in, we have gone through all of the news. We have given our breakdown of the roast of WrestleMania. How do you roast an event? I've seen people roast it. How do you roast an event?
Well, maybe talk about the shitty ones. You know, like, I guess you could roast WrestleMania probably 13 pretty well. 11, you could definitely roast pretty good. I don't know, dude. I imagine it'd be more of a roast of WWE or professional wrestling in general. And Vince McMahon, I expect to come up.
Probably.
A little bit.
Probably.
Once or twice.
I'm sure it's going to be a landmark event for WWE and TKO.
Sure.
So, yes, we went through all of that, plus the latest news, Alberto El Patron getting suspended in Tijuana for a fracas, we will call it. Pete Dunne being added to Bloodsport and kind of a look at that card. The WWE booking up more European venues for this August. The New Japan Cup final is in just a couple of hours. Also, I want to make mention that for those on the Post Wrestling Cafe, you have access to our latest edition of Rewind Away, where Wayne and I went back to February of 1964.
Yes, we did.
Not to talk about any Bruno Sammartino title defense. No, instead, it was the Beatles coming to America with this documentary that only came out a couple of months ago on Disney Plus. And Wayne and I got to chat about the Beatles, which is something we never, ever do. But I had fun doing this review quite a bit, to be honest.
I could say I've never chatted about the Beatles with John before, and I don't know if I ever will again. I mean,
Might not.
You know, it's just I'm a big Beatles fan. I don't think John is really at all. But this was a topic that was chosen by our executive producer, Ryan Charco. And we've now, with Rewind Away, opened it up to non-wrestling topics such as this one. And so it gives us a chance to try to review things beyond just professional wrestling to maybe get out of our own comfort zones. I personally had a great time actually talking about this, especially with John and especially with Ryan. Did you, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it, but I put Ryan through this sort of like guessing game.
Yes, he had to guess the Beatles song by a clip that way.
When I say a clip, I mean like 1 second. All right. In some cases, not even like the first note, but just the intro. And Brian killed it. He was, it was a lot of fun talking about. It was a topic I'm very passionate about. So hope people enjoyed it.
That is up on the cafe. Also dropping on Thursday, we are going to have Rich Van and WH Park chatting about episode 4 of Daredevil. I can only imagine the fan. Have you watched the latest episode?
No, I've not. I think I'm on episode 2. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Have you logged in to Disney Plus over the last 24 hours since this episode has dropped?
No. Okay. Why? Is it a spoiler territory?
I feel that given the blowback I have got in the past for just using a poster. I feel like when I saw this thumbnail that some fans would be furious by this.
I agree.
I don't know if it's a thing or not. I didn't know if this was expected or not, but I was curious.
I have not been open to the discourse, but I would expect some blowback with this one.
I love it. This is the kind of feedback I want to hear about. But yes, Rich and WH will be tackling that. A double episode of Daredevil next week. They're dropping two next week.
Okay. All right. Excellent. I actually just watched Captain America: Brave New World this afternoon.
Ooh! Okay.
Went to the theater to watch it, so I'm catching up on the review of that coming up next.
Anything you can share about Brave New World? Or
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I thought it was you know, 6.5 out of 10 is what I would give it.
What was the length around? Was it a long movie?
2 hours.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, also coming up this week, I'm going to be releasing my interview with Evan Husney, the executive producer of Dark Side of the Ring. We're going to be dropping it Friday morning for members on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We'll be putting it out next week for everybody, but if you want a sneak peek, it is coming out Friday morning. And among the topics that are going to be covered this season, the season premiere will cover the Hell in a Cell match between Mick Foley and The Undertaker. Then Ed the Sheik Farhat, Tony Atlas, Muhammad Hassan, Eddie Gilbert, Vader, Daphne, superstar Billy Graham, Ludwig Borga, and Billy Jack Haynes. And if you remember, last year, Billy Jack Haynes, after the death of his wife, was arrested and is facing charges. And I asked Evan about profiling an individual when this case is ongoing and sort of the circumstances of how this episode came together. So here is a brief preview of this interview talking about the episode involving Billy Jack Haynes, who is still in prison.
Obviously, when the news broke about what happened, you know, with him and his wife and his wife's death, it was like, oh my God, this is tragic and shocking and insane. And so, but right around that time, he had approached us about doing the episode about him, despite, you know, being behind bars. And so it was this very bizarre.
He had reached out to you while he was incarcerated?
Yes. So it was this like bizarre situation about him being able to tell his story and being approached with that, where it was like, well, if he wants to tell his story and he wants to speak, let's look into that and see what that would look like. And so it was pretty fascinating in terms of now when we got there and we did the interview with him behind bars, which you'll see in the episode, there were, you know, for obvious reasons, there's only, you know, certain things he can and cannot talk about because he's obviously being advised by counsel, but he still went through with the interview. And then of course we contacted a lot of people, you know, contemporaries of his in the business, people that knew him, to try and sort of understand how we got here, right? That was kind of the thesis of the episode. Not so much about deconstructing what happened, because that is an ongoing case, and we don't know what the result is, that what that's going to be. It hasn't gone to trial yet. But it is sort of an examination of Billy Jack as a person and sort of all the events in his life that have happened and trying to separate fact from fiction.
So that is Evan Husney talking about the Billy Jack Haynes episode that I took from the expanded answer that you'll hear on Friday, that this episode sounds insane. And yeah, Billy Jack Haynes reaching out to them while he's in prison facing murder charges. I don't know if that would be my one phone call to Dark Side of the Ring, but they are doing an episode on him. They interviewed him in prison. And I mean, Billy Jack Haynes has been a pretty, you know, if you have followed any of like his shoot interviews, like he has had some wild stuff that he has thrown out there. You know, you're talking about somebody that is probably not of the most sound mind and is now facing murder charges. So, I mean, that episode sounds nuts. I think the Ludwig Borga one is going to be, I mean, all I would advise people is to just skim through his Wikipedia page and you'll get a sense of the life that Ludwig Borga lived. And if all your familiarity with him is through his New Japan tenure or the very brief time he had in WWF, it's really a small slice of this guy's life that was a very, very crazy life that he lived. And the other one that would stand out to me as well that I'm very intrigued by is Eddie Gilbert, who died in 1995. I know that they interviewed his brother Doug Gilbert, and the handling of that one is going to be really interesting because he is one of those. He was very much someone that was a mentor to Paul Heyman, and had he lived, he was 33 when he died in 1995, and I feel very confidently this would have been quite a significant behind the scenes player for years and years to come. Might have even still been an influence to the present day had he lived. And this was someone I think like very, very heavily involved in the whole newsletter scene and understanding that as a viable distribution method to get your stories out, embracing that aspect of the business that he saw changing. So there's some very interesting topics this year. Daphne, I think, as well. It sounds like that will be a very, very very sad story involving her. Are there any here way that that jump out at you?
I definitely want to see the Muhammad Hassan episode because I think that's more in line with like my particular fandom and like, you know, when I might have been actively consuming a lot more of this. Ludwig Borga, certainly. Big Van Vader, I think, you know, is definitely a fan favorite that I'm curious to know a little bit more about. I'm curious to know what more they can unearth about Hell in a Cell that we may not have already known about before, you know?
Yeah, it's one where, yeah, that is one of like how many, you know, it's this famous match. And I think looking at it from the, it's been interesting because Mick Foley, you have heard over the years, it's like he's had this weird relationship to that match. I think there's a period where he didn't want to just be remembered for Hell in a Cell. But I think at a certain point, I think he realizes that that is going to be the number one match that is associated because it's so spectacular. And we get into this in the discussion of why that match has stood the test of time so much when we have seen unbelievable stunts over the years. And to me, nothing has really crossed the threshold that comes close to that Hell in a Cell. Whether it was just that was so beyond the belief of what someone could do off of a cage, that we
could,
have.
It could have been one of wrestling's tragedies.
You watch that match, it's like, I did not watch it live that night, but had I been watching that, I feel I would have been like, am I watching somebody die in front of me? You watch that and it is a miracle that he walked away from that. And it's this interesting dichotomy too, of someone that was never the same physically after that match, but that trade-off was like, we talk about like, you know, those like immortality that some of these performers seek. And that's not hyperbole that Mick Foley will always be remembered for that. But there was a significant physical toll that he paid for the rest of it did shorten his career on top of it. So that's all coming out. The interview will be out Friday. Also getting Evan's thoughts on the Mr. McMahon documentary series and how he would tailor a WWE Drive to Survive. What would be the elements he would be looking at from kind of a modern perspective to look at WWE talent in that light? So we will be releasing that later this week. Collision Course will be delayed until Monday this coming week on the Cafe because we have Collision on Saturday and Sunday night. Kate and John Cena will be presenting a show covering both episodes coming up on Monday. But now, Wei, get on your snowsuit. We're heading to Omaha, Nebraska, the site of a snowstorm that
really
it was very worrisome when Tony Khan had tweeted out that there was a blizzard. And when the show opened, Excalibur warned us that there was nearly a foot of snow outside of the arena. I'm like, nearly a foot of snow? Cry me a river. No, I did see images in Omaha. It did look like they got trounced by the snow, which is wild because, man, we've got beautiful weather here.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, this. Like today was like 20 in the 20s in Toronto. Like I didn't need a jacket all day today. So you know, I feel terrible. I mean, listen, we're equipped to handle snow. I wonder how often Omaha gets this level of snow. So yeah. Looks like it sucks. So hopefully,
I mean, everything they advertised, they presented on the show, and they announced remember, they're taping Collision on top of this. So they announced 8 matches for the 2 nights of Collision. So all of that was being taped tonight. So I didn't hear of anyone that missed the show, but everything advertised in advance, they did present. So WrestleTix had announced a number of 2,021, which is just not a great number. I wonder how many made it to the show on top of that, if the blizzard kept anyone out. Cannot complain, though, about the crowd that, I mean, they did sound lively for a good portion of the show as well, for a small number, and it might have even been below that 2,000 number. Starting things off is the four-way with Orange Cassidy, Mark Davis, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Ricochet, where the winner will advance to face Kenny Omega at Dynasty. Don Callis is on commentary, noting he's not a fan of Speedball because he's from Quebec. And I thought this was a really great match. We had Orange Cassidy and Speedball that got involved. We had the rapid fire limp kicks by Orange Cassidy. So then he puts his hands in the pockets. Bailey puts his hands behind his back and they have a duel without the usage of their hands. Mark Davis pretty much played like the tank in this match to just come in and run through everybody. During the commercial break, they compared Davis's body type to that of Tommy Dreamer. So they just started to make jokes about Tommy Dreamer during the break. Orange Cassidy hits this multiple revolution tilt whirl arm drag. And when he comes out of it, he is grabbing his bicep and the announcers are focusing on it for the rest of the match. We see some incredible highlights here. Ricochet hits a shooting star to Cassidy for a near fall. Orange manages the orange punch to Davis, sends Ricochet out and gets the near fall. And then Davis with a one-arm powerbomb to Bailey and then a pop-up powerbomb on Ricochet before deadlifting Cassidy up for the pile driver. Bailey is in for the big save. And in the end, Bailey hits a spinning wheel kick to the back of Davis's head. And as Bailey rolls him up with a backslide, Ricochet stacks on top using the rope for leverage. And we get the pin and the double winner in Ricochet and Speedball Mike Bailey. I feel silly complaining that we're getting Kenny Omega, Ricochet, and Speedball Mike Bailey. But I thought this finish was just so ridiculous with the rope being used. And Justin Roberts declares that it is a three-way here. I would have almost omitted just the usage of the rope. Like, we don't have any... Tony Khan's not ruling here. There's nothing to dispute this.
He's a heel.
Well, shouldn't... We all just watched this here, and this is the finish.
So, but then you're negating any usage of the ropes or really any sort of cheating, like, finish from now until the end of time.
I'm just saying that, like, wouldn't we have had me, it made just like Justin Roberts look so foolish here.
But the referee's decision stands. It was the referee's decision, not Justin Roberts. You know, I mean, there's been precedent set in throughout wrestling history, like grabbing the tights, like, I mean, you know, anything. So I didn't have that reaction to this finish, John. I actually quite liked it. I thought it was like a creative way of, first of all, healing Ricochet, you know, that much more, and giving Speedball a continued advancement and even protection, or actually giving Davis protection by having a double stacking and a rope leverage in order to defeat him, as a way to enter, you know, two people out of this tournament into the match. I was satisfied by it. I didn't find issue. I thought overall the match itself gave important focus to three of the new prospects, you know, on this particular roster. The way that they had booked Speedball up until this point in these 2 weeks, I think he already feels very much like an established star in this company. And when I say star, I mean like somebody who belongs like in the upper mid card tier, along with like, you know, certainly an Orange Cassidy and a Ricochet. The crowd was chanting his name, like Omaha for however
many people. He looked
very
good in this match. Like he was right in place with everybody. The audience took to him and
he feels special, you know, and this was a crowd of like, I'm sure diehards that saw this guy as a big deal already. And they've been booking him like, you know, in the short amount of time, like he's a big deal. Ricochet, I thought, played a very effective heel here, doing like fun, memorable, personality driven stuff, like getting on commentary and just like, again, like showing the personality. We know he's a great wrestler, but it's the personality that kind of makes the difference now for him. And I would say for like Mark Davis, but despite getting pinned, I thought he was very effectively presented as the capable powerhouse wrestler in contrast to like the three cruiserweights here.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, we've got a review of the final night of the New Japan Cup with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. Rewind Away covers the Beatles 64 documentary from Disney+, a new edition of Talk, and the return of Book Club as Neil Flanagan and John Pollock chat Queen of the Ring by Jeff Lean. Plus, it is your home for all XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Go XL now at PostWrestlingCafe.com. The Hurt Syndicate had a video about dominating the tag division, and then it's Mercedes Moné and Billy Starks for the TBS title. They did a video feature on Starks, and Moné, early on, she's playing around with Starks.
It was a video feature, like, by definition, but it was, like, a 20-second thing. Didn't really tell you a whole lot about, like, who she was. Just kind of showed you that, hey, like, it's true. She was an actual wrestler in Ring of Honor prior to this.
She's 19. That was the story. Moné rolls to the floor, avoiding the senton, and then it's Starks diving to the floor and then hitting a swan dive to the floor and then lands her senton, getting a two count. So the idea here was Moné overlooking her and Starks surprising her by bringing the fight to her. Moné takes over during the break, ends up with Starks getting reversed and Moné hitting a double knee gut buster. There's a superplex by Moné. Starks stops the three amigos and lands an ushigoroshi and a bridging German. And then after Starks lands a high kick, Moné takes her down with the clothesline. It gets hit with a shotgun into the corner. And then Starks lifts her up and is hit with a Alabama slam going into the buckle, sending Moné, and then lifts her up for the Sugoi driver. And Moné takes this and gets her foot on the rope. And this crowd went nuts for this.
Sugoi driver looked crazy. And I've seen it in other matches. It didn't look this stiff like this. Just imagine if you haven't seen it, like an electric chair driver, basically sort of like a one winged angel. But the way the camera happened to catch it or didn't,
it looked like Mercedes was coming straight down on the crown of her head in the way it was being set up.
Very scary in the moment. But I mean, ultimately, like if she's OK, then really as perfect about as you probably would have hoped.
I mean, this was an incredible near fall spot that they did here. Starks misses the senton onto the edge, and after a roll up attempt, Moné moves to the statement maker, taps out Billy Starks, and I would say your attempt of getting Billy Starks over in this performance, I thought they did a really great job with this, and I think that you helped establish Billy Starks as like another player in this women's division. I thought this worked out really well. And I really loved the promo that, well, we can talk about it now, is that she was interviewed backstage with Renee, and Moné kind of downplayed Billy Starks, but then stated that, you know, who's her mentor? Who taught her wrestling? Because they know nothing. So, I mean, utilizing this to introduce and get Billy Starks on like this level, but also planting the seeds for Athena on top of this. I really thought all this stuff with Mercedes and Billy Starks was very good.
Yeah, the match turned out very well. I still feel pretty critical of like what little they did to actually set up Billy Starks here. And I think like coming out of this, it's very clear she is basically here to introduce the Athena program. At the same time, like, you know, properly introducing her, but I felt like they could have done a better job of building up to the introduction rather than like, this really did feel like her first introduction, a title match against Mercedes Moné.
She did splash her with water. It was that.
Yeah. I felt that creative could have been a lot more effective. But you know, like the match turned out really well, and coming out of the match, I think you look at it as a net positive. I think her wrestling overall looks very smooth and good, but more importantly with Billy Starks, I think there's a definite, just like very likable underdog babyface quality about her. That's not necessarily something you could teach anybody. So, but she happens to have it, you know, same thing that like a Willow has, except like Starks is a very different type of wrestler than Willow. So I think the roster could definitely use somebody like her. I can imagine Tony, like, I hope Tony has high hopes for her, but like, it was clear she was here to play a supporting act here to set up an Athena program. I just hope they have something following up for Billy Starks afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, for all that we have talked about the AEW women's division over the years, like it's really surging at this point, and it's just one where I just feel like it's going to be very tough for a Billy Starks. Like, if you have Billy Starks attached to Athena, that gives her a role, but it's going to be very difficult. Just to like they're featuring a lot of various women on these shows, and
the airtime is still limited.
It's still very limited. You know, we had two matches on this show, but I mean, generally it's like, and you think about the women that aren't even being used, like Jamie Hayter is still off and Britt Baker is off. Like you can list off all these names that are not even on TV at the moment.
And it's not just like having space for matches. It's having space for interview segments, backstage interview segments, video packages and things like that. And it can certainly become tougher. But hey, like as a first sort of like big step to in front of a Dynamite audience, I thought Billy Starks did really well here.
They're very good at this step of the introductory process. Mm-hmm. And it's like 3 weeks from now, hopefully Billy Starks has something. But the follow up is always very important, because in 3 weeks, if not, this will be totally forgotten.
So what do you think? Like, I feel a pretty clear direction would be Athena versus Moné for All In. Like, is the timing right for that sort of introduction?
Texas
right
makes a lot of sense for Athena.
She was doing all of the press for the show. Yeah.
The thing is, that's July. I mean, it's. Mm-hmm. You know,
They're beginning the build to All In, though, already with like mentions of the Owen and everything.
MJF. First we had the Outrunners with the Omaha Mavericks. This might just be the Outrunners gig now, working with Barstool and going to colleges to
just a little side business where they're making money for AEW by doing these sort of speaking gigs or custom.
Hey,
videos.
Man, they're getting on TV. That's all good for them.
Sure.
MJF is sitting in the locker room. He lists off the people that people are betting on to beat Moxley, including Darby, Swerve, and Hangman, but I'm the only horse to place your bets on. He's going to give MVP an answer to his question next week, citing that maybe I need a click of my own to battle Dictator John, but the last time I trusted someone, I got burned. Like, yes, we don't need any more trust issue stories for MJF. I don't even know if we
need any more stables with MJF. I mean, he hasn't had a great record with them.
No, they've been very unstable. Yes.
Yeah.
Midway
just a tee up for an answer next week. Yeah.
John Moxley and Cope is midway through the show in the street fight, and Moxley is entering from outside. Looked very chilly outside, and he's jumped by Cope, and we are going right into things. The bell rings while they are outside fighting in a production truck, and they end up making their way into the arena, and here we introduce weapons. And I will just say this, like, Adam Copeland, this guy matched Moxley, like, beat for beat throughout. This guy at 51 is... like it's remarkable. Like this guy works super hard, and like you watch this, he does not feel out of place with any of these younger guys that he has placed with to a degree. This guy ain't Darby Allin, like, jumping all over the place, but man, did this guy, I think, just work super hard in this match.
I think I might be at the point now where I can actually say I think I enjoy present day Adam Copeland more than I did during his initial run. I mean, physically, I think he's still quite incredible. Again, for even like not knowing his age, I think the guy like works really well. He's also just a much better promo and just a much better character overall. Seems to just have a lot more control over like what he's trying to evoke out of an audience. So I feel like he's much more of a complete wrestler now than maybe he even was back then.
And it becomes very obvious, especially by this point where, you know, we might see some people come into AEW and it's the novelty of being somewhere new. And, you know, it's now been around 18 months since he's come in. And, you know, this guy's heart and head are totally into this. Like, it's very evident that, like, he is this isn't him just coming in and doing the bare minimum to get by.
He's like a Jon Moxley.
It is. And I would almost guarantee that these two, I'm sure, had a bit of a chip on their shoulder from the reaction to the pay-per-view. It certainly, to me, was evidenced in this. So we get the weapons involved. Moxley is using a kendo stick to choke Cope. They go onto the desk. Moxley bites the nose and hits a paradigm shift. And then Cope sidesteps as Moxley ends up going into the steps. We get tables brought out, more chairs, and Cope just blasts a chair into the face of Moxley, and we see Prince Nana watching backstage. No swerve on the show, but he will get the winner of this. And then Cope pulls out Spike, and there is Spike, who would have the big role in this match. But as he gets into the ring, he is caught in a cutter by Moxley. Table is set up in the corner. Moxley turns and is hit in the gut by Spike. Then he is hit in the back, and then in what I can only imagine is going to be the spot that is replayed over and over in whatever Moxley retrospectives you want to put, he takes a snap suplex onto Spike. And I'm watching this, I'm like, oh man, that is quite the bump to take on all of those spikes. And Moxley gets up, and as he gets to his feet, I'm like, wait a minute, Spike is levitating. And then you realize all of these spikes are embedded in Jon Moxley's back. And the whole crowd is just aghast. I cannot remember too many reactions like this for an AEW show. And he gets up.
Hold on a second. What did you not watch the pay-per-view a week ago?
I mean, there is a reaction to spectacular moves, even like the hypodermic needle. This was a level of horror that these 2,000 people very much.
Did you
much
not watch Ospreay versus Fletcher? There was
I wasn't
horror
in horror
match.
Watching that. Like, I wasn't.
Mariah May versus like Tony Storm. I mean, I feel like this is like in line with
Taz was not saying he was going to vomit for any of those, for Spanish flies off the cages, or even how bloody May and Storm got. This Taz just openly said, I think I'm going to vomit. And I thought he was being very legit here. Moxley gets up, and dude, it's not like just a shake this off. These spikes are right in, and they have, dude, I can't even believe this. All of a sudden, Wheeler Yuta comes in, and he takes out Cope with a Busaiku knee. And Yuta goes to pull Spike out of his back, and the skin is ripping. It's coming out. Paul Turner goes to Yuta. He's like, let me try this. And Yuta cannot get this out of his back. Jon Moxley, God knows what the hell this guy was thinking or feeling at this moment. If ever there was a need for a picture-in-picture, it was for Renee in the back at this moment.
Forget
and
Moxley. I wanted to see Renee's reaction.
Paul Turner somehow yanked this weapon out of Jon Moxley's back. This was insane. This was utterly insane.
It was wild. And like all of those sort of prior instances that you mentioned, those were all on pay-per-view. None of those instances were on TV. So I would say, like, for me, that's probably what stood out the most, the fact that we were seeing these sort of visuals on broadcast cable television. So the type of clearances that AEW happens to have that I've never seen The level of for professional wrestling on TV is something very different, and you know, it's part of like what makes AEW different from WWE.
You are never ever ever going to see something approximating this in a WWE setting.
No. Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
this was wild. Yeah.
So the match continues. Claudio and Pac make their returns, jumping the barricade, attacking Cope, FTR rundown, and it includes Dax pile-driving Moxley as they take out Claudio and Pac. Cope spears Moxley through the table, and he goes for the cover, and Marina Shafir breaks it up, prompting Willow to come out and take out Marina with a cannonball. Cope then spears Kip Sabian, who's run in. He gets hit by a Wayne's World from Nick Wayne, but Cope still manages to kick out one last time before Moxley goes to the Bulldog Choke, and like Revolution, he passes out with Paul Turner waving it off. Incredible. I thought this was fantastic. This was their retribution, I thought, for Revolution.
Highlighted certainly by like some of the incredible stunts, you could say, and completely by this spike nail to the back stunt. Now, without it, would you have felt similar?
I still thought these guys were having a great match up until Spike was involved. I just thought like the street fight really worked. I think the fact that you also like threw people off by putting this earlier in the show, so I think that kind of worked to the benefit as well. And I just thought they had an incredible pace that they maintained. Like, they had a level of aggression from start to finish. This was like a 20-minute match. It got... You know, you had all of the run-ins. I mean, that is kind of part and parcel now with every single Death Riders match. But I thought these two, I really enjoyed this match.
Yeah, it completely ended the feud on a way more positive note than what they came out of the pay-per-view with. But I have to say, like, as somebody who is usually quite tolerant of like run-ins whenever it's serving like a greater story, It did aggravate me for this particular match. I think by continuing to give these Death Riders like the House of Torture type of booking, yes, it is effective in making people want to see somebody beat these guys. But I think overall, it's to me not a worthy sacrifice of like sort of the reputation of your company to have so many run-in finishes just in the sort of like aim for generating heat. You know, I feel like to really kind of turn people's opinions on the Death Riders around, I think you certainly have to avoid doing these types of finishes with run-ins on top of run-ins. To me, it just screams of like sort of a cheap and uncreative way of achieving heat when I think there are should be other ways.
Well, you didn't like this finish. I didn't like the finish in the opener, but we can split the difference. Yeah. The Death Riders exit. And the crowd, Cope is doing like the, like he's standing in the ring, like the,
it's the applause
to me.
Sign.
It's the Benoit spot for me that I often think of, but it's, he really had to do some prodding to get this crowd to be like, can everyone get on their feet? It's time to apply. And they did get there at a certain point. FTR and Willow are in the ring with him, and Cope on the ground puts his hand out for Dax to lift him, and Dax just looks at him and walks off. And this is, you know, they have been doing this with the Undisputed Kingdom, like they like these walk-offs with the handshakes, but in this instance Cash is not on board with this, and Dax just walks out. Cash is totally confused, and Cash is the one to help Cope up, gives him a hug, and then they leave Cope in the ring where he does get his standing ovation. But yes, a lot coming out of this match, and it kind of was, you know, you're doing this, whatever it is you're fracturing here with rated FTR, while at the same time you had to get Kip Sabian and Nick Wayne involved because you want Christian hovering over all of this. There was a lot afterwards that it kind of, to me, was, I just feel that the, like, if you're keeping this Christian stuff alive, it was a lot when you were also doing this FTR deal at the end as well with Cope.
It could play into the same story. You know, maybe Dax is in search of a father.
Maybe that could come together. Dax Cage.
I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. I mean, not for a second can I buy that they might be breaking up FTR, but I'm kind of curious as to what possible issue could Dax have with Adam Copeland that he wouldn't help him up.
Maybe it's, you know, There's a lot of divide right now between the U.S. and Canada. Maybe that's that's going to be their splitting. They're going to split.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
It was just amazing. The layout of this show, that we had this, and I'm sure no one expected the degree of violence that Jon Moxley was going to be incurring here, but immediately following this, we go to Renee in the back, who's just got to be Renee, professional broadcaster here, who's all smiles with Bandido, and asks, how's your family been since Revolution? And Bandido knows the dangers of pro wrestling, but what Jericho did, humiliating his family, making his mother cry, he will never forgive. Chris Jericho, he is challenging Jericho to show up on Sunday on Collision and bring my brother's mask. But Johnny TV walks in laughing at him, calls this the biggest collision ever on the weekend, and Bandido crying in the middle of the ring, that isn't ratings. You facing Johnny TV is ratings, and will beat the Super Bowl. Spoiler, they definitely will not. And we went from the tease of Jericho versus Bandido with my brother's mask at stake to Bandido versus Johnny TV. Like, talk about a 180 that we took in terms of promising and delivering.
How hard did they actually promise Jericho versus Bandido for these collisions?
I'm just saying within this segment, you had Bandido challenging Jericho for Sunday, and we go to the... It's not like they were like actively promoting it, but I was like, okay, we're going to a bare-bones collision match.
Yeah, you're taking your time. Hopefully an impressive showcase for Bandido in that match. I thought Bandido sounded good on the promo. I hope that they let him talk a bit more.
Will Ospreay against AR Fox. This was added earlier in the day. They shook hands at the beginning. Stundog sends Fox to the floor, and then he gets seated in a chair. Ospreay goes to run around the ring, but Fox stops him with a dive. And after ducking the hidden blade, Fox hits a springboard into a Spanish fly, misses the 450, and Will hits the hidden blade. All throughout the match, Will is selling his hip, which may or may not be selling, and grabs the hip at the end after the win over AR Fox, and they reiterate that he has declared himself for the Owen Hart Cup.
Yeah. Fun match with lots of good flippy shit here from both of these men. Entertaining, got a decent reaction. I like them carrying the effects of the cage match through this hip injury for Ospreay. He, with a lot of weeks to go until All In, like, that seems to be his like next major storyline. I think having the hip injury will make all of his matches perhaps more interesting and vulnerable.
Renee spoke with Hangman, who is asked about his thoughts about Moxley facing Swerve at Dynasty. He said he would never let Swerve win the title again, and I'm a man of my word, but my focus is not going to be on another man. It's going to be on myself. And he declares himself for the Owen Cup, and he will become the next champion.
Interesting to hear him mention that he's a man of his word. So, like, I mean, they're both seemingly baby faces at the moment, and we can only presume when Paige was trying to talk to Swerve in his locker room, it was to somehow make amends. But if he's still a man of his word, well, how is he going to get involved in perhaps this title match? Maybe more likely is the fact that he will somehow let that go and allow Swerve to try to become champion. So I'm curious to see how they continue that story in the background as he calls for this shot at the Owen, and it's looking like it's the tournament full of like main eventers that
feels like it will be a very loaded tournament the way and they have been setting like all the pieces like with MJF's promo of listing, like that would be a time that you would, I don't know if Darby will be back by the time, because this Owen tournament has to start pretty soon, you would think. But, I mean, everyone else, you have built up, like, your MJFs and Swerves and Hangman and Ospreay.
And somehow Jeff Jarrett has to
I think Jarrett will be in that tournament. I do think. I think MJF should beat him in the tournament. That would be my thought. Collision on Saturday night will have Daniel Garcia and Adam Cole for the TNT title with everyone banned from ringside. Max Caster's open challenge. Julia Hart against Queen Amanada in the rubber match. Takeshita and the Murder Machines against Hobbs, Mark Briscoe, and Rocky Romero. And then Sunday, It is going to be Hologram and Commander against Beast, Mortos, and Dralistico, Bandito and Johnny TV in the Super Bowl appeal, Harley Cameron in action, and the Death Riders defend the Trios titles against Top Flight and AR Fox, who they reminded us won that Battle Royal several years ago for however many thousands of dollars. This title shot. I can't tell you the last time AR Fox teamed with Top Flight, but they are the number one contenders.
Yeah, I think a lot's happened to AR Fox and Top Flight since then. But
you lose to Will Ospreay, great things happen.
I guess so. Yeah, it's a lot of matches. In terms of just like appeal, I can't really say there's like that big of a draw. I include Daniel Garcia versus Adam Cole in that. It's to me like they spent time on it, but I can't really say I'm that interested in it.
It's also probably the match they'll start the show with because you're going to have that big lead-in from the NCAA tournament. Like in theory, you would want to put your biggest match first on these two shows.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Commander Hologram versus Dralistico and Beast Mortos match might actually be the one I'm most interested in.
I would put that first, to be quite honest. Of those four matches, I wouldn't be putting the Trios match first. I think I put like a crazy Lucha spectacle on first. That's what I would do on the Sunday show.
It's interesting to think about like what sort of impression you want to give people that might be just, you know, sticking around, like perhaps at the bar with the TV still on. What kind of like version of your product do you want to present to those people?
Want the Lucha, like more than anything here. I think that would be that what would translate the most to just... Like, You've got 5 minutes to really grab someone's attention.
Do we go as far as like, should they be aiming to present wrestling that works without sound? You know, like if you're talking about trying to cater to a bar audience that might instead have music on, but still the visual of a wrestling show on TV, certainly a Lucha Libre match would do that.
You know what? I would have booked a rematch for the Saturday night, John Moxley versus Spike.
Oh God, that would certainly.
What translates without sound?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that match without
Spike
sound,
is a visual worker.
Might work. Yeah, certainly.
just replay that at the end or at the beginning of Collision. And next week, this is what we have for next week. Kenny Omega returns because he was off for 1 week, and MJF will give his answer to MVP. So,
yeah,
big Wednesday coming up. This is when Renee spoke with Mercedes. We already went over that, and then. They put on the main event, Chris Statlander and Megan Bain. Timeless Toni Storm comes out. She might have got the loudest reaction of anyone on this show.
Yeah, I don't think that's all that surprising. You know, she's one of the biggest stars in the company right now, especially coming off of that incredible match at Revolution.
What did you think about putting this on? It's like Megan Bain and Chris Statlander was not so much the main event. Toni Storm was the main event on this show, and I think that was the key. But this was interesting, the fact that they went with this and pushing the women's championship as your main segment on the show.
Right. As opposed to what Cope and Mox, for instance, or
even the four way like they
or Monet,
they,
you know. Yeah, yeah. Somewhat interesting, but I guess like I also know that we're in an age now where the last segment isn't. It's the main event, and it's certainly important because you're trying to hook people to last through the whole thing, but it's not the most viewed segment.
It's not. I mean, I guess your strategy would be like this would be to me a tough ask to hold people. Like once the street fight was over, are people sticking around once that match is over? We'll see how this performs. But Toni Storm got an incredible reaction coming out here. And so Storm is on commentary. There was some hilarious stuff during the break. She says, now that we're off the air, I was very surprised, Tony, to see that your name popped up in the JFK files. I thought that was hilarious.
As somebody who just watched a documentary about JFK.
That is right. And yes, the 60,000 pages got released on Tuesday. So if you want to do some light reading. There's a blue thunderbomb by Statlander for a two count, and then Bane gets her up for a belly-to-belly. Bane hits a powerbomb out of the corner, and then her Fate's Descent gets stopped, and they get into a big strike battle. Ford trips Statlander, and it builds up to a lot of heat as Penelope gets ejected by Aubrey for the easy pop. Chris and Bane then trade Germans, each popping up from the other. Then Bane hits a suicide dive. And finally, Bane gets a hold of Statlander, throws her into the apron, but then takes her and throws her into Tony Storm, taking her down, hits Fate's Descent on the floor, rolls Statlander in, and hits another Fate's Descent to get the win. Like, a dominant win for Megan Bane, which is what this needed to be.
For the second time. Well, yes. The first time she had help, but this was definitely a dominant and clean win for Bane.
Yeah. I thought Statlander did a really great job with Megan Bane here, who does have her limitations, but this really emphasized and accentuated the strengths of Megan Bane to look like this world beater. And then after the match, Tony starts taping up her hand and attacks Bane for the big pop. And my God, did this place go wild for this brawl. They battled through security. Bane is sent to the floor. They're all chanting Tony. And Storm gets on the mic and remarks at what a big bitch she is and says that the bigger they are, the harder they come. So it's time for us to get tantric. And we're going to make a date for Dynasty. And I'm going to make your thighs shake, your body quake, and leave with this strap on. And next week, Wei is doing the Tony Storm promo. I will say this. Whatever this quarter ends up doing, I think is so irrelevant, because coming out of this show, it was like the first time it felt to me like Tony Storm, you could argue, is maybe the most over babyface in this company. Not the most over female, the most over babyface to some people. You can at least make that argument. And closing the show with her, it sort of was just that that pronouncement to your audience that this is our show closer. It's Tony Storm, and we can put them in this position. And it's one that I would just – it's like you're paying dividends for the future of investing in, like, this is – a main event level act, and she certainly received a reaction from this Omaha crowd that reflected that. So I thought Tony Storm just really came off like such a big star, and
she's a total main eventer, and I think like successfully did so in for Grand Slam in Australia. I think you had Revolution coming out of that show with a lot of people clamoring actually for maybe a hindsight, you know, decision to perhaps put the Tony Storm Mariah May match on last instead of what did actually come on last. So yeah, and you just add on top of that, like, this incredibly entertaining character and very unique style, I guess if you could call it that, a promo that continues to just, man, just make everybody laugh every single week. Then she feels like she should be one of AEW's calling cards, you know, one of their signature stars, which I think she already is, but she could even be that much more. I thought it was a very good hard-hitting match these two had. You know, they sought to have essentially sort of like a women's meat match, and I think they achieved it. I thought the commentary, I'm kind of torn because it was very entertaining, but I did feel like it sort of did a bit of a disservice to the style of match, the hard-hitting sort of straightforward style of match that these two had. The commentators, I think, were too busy like joking around and laughing than to maybe put that sort of needed focus to make these two feel like they were actually having a serious, like, you know, like just tough, you know, monster type of style match. And I ultimately don't know if like what they were aiming for in ring necessarily meshed with what was on commentary. I also wonder if they've done enough with Megan Bane as yet. Like Tony continues to say, like, she's, I don't think she said some few words, but like hasn't really, not to say like a character like that has to cut a promo, but I still wonder if like she's hot enough yet for a title match. But they still have time to get to Dynasty to get her there, and I imagine through the program they will.
It feels by design they're not having her talk, and maybe that's why they've attached Penelope Ford to her. But you are right. Like, I do think they are putting her into a role where you do want to have kind of a more developed character. because she's still like relatively new in AEW, and they booked her very well. And this is going to be certainly a test. And this was probably her most successful outing that she has had, period, with Statlander. And the expectation is going to be very high for a Toni Storm match, especially coming off what the precedent was at Revolution and the whole program with Mariah May.
Let me ask you this. Would you do the title switch?
I wouldn't dismiss it. I'm not expecting it, but I don't completely dismiss it. I don't think Toni chasing is the worst idea, and she can...
Like, what would Toni beating Megan Bain do? Or Megan Bain? I mean, it would set Toni up for, I think, a big match for another opponent, but I almost wonder if, like, Bain is the type of person you could belt, like, on first try, you know, because she kind of presents as a Brock Lesnar type of, you know, champion, right?
It's also at a time that I don't think Toni Storm's ever been hotter than this moment. It feels like they have something.
Doesn't mean you can't take the belt off of her and give her the chase to make her.
It doesn't. She could chase it, and that's fine as well. The question is Bayne that person that you see that with? Is she more than a one pay-per-view program with Toni Storm? Like, this is obviously a very, very important set of weeks for Megan Bayne and building this up. So there you go. I thought this was an excellent Dynamite overall. I thought the street fight was very strong. I thought the four-way was great. Like, just like a really strong show overall, and a visual that will certainly turn your stomach. That will be probably a lasting one in people's memory bank.
Should I make that the cover for?
If they won't flag us, we might. It might. I don't know if that'll fly on Blue Sky.
We shall see. We shall see. But I agree with you. I enjoyed it. I thought they gave you enough star power on the show. They gave you like important matches on the show. I thought like Kope and Mox essentially was the end of that program. You know, whether or not this was always meant to be the end, or if this was some sort of make good for the pay-per-view, we don't know, but they gave you the conclusion to that story tonight. And then of course continued build towards both All In and also Dynasty. The Monet Billy Starks match was also very good.
Yes. And one day we will look back at the night that John Moxley decided to impale himself in front of 2,000 people.
Oh, he's probably impaled himself in front of far less and willingly done so. Yeah.
Yes. Well,
apparently he drove 11 hours, meaning I hope they're giving him this guy a flight back, because, man, 11 hours in the car with that sort of injury. Long ride for
in a storm, no less. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it, everybody. That was Dynamite from Omaha, Nebraska. We're going to say goodbye to everybody on the YouTube feed. But if you are on the Post Wrestling Cafe, the fun continues. We have a bunch of feedback and questions to get into. And, of course, you can join us live every Wednesday night after Dynamite. Join on in at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gives you 30 days of access to try it out. If you enjoy it, you get the live stream for Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each and every week, plus our shows including Rewind Away, Collision Course, Beatles Reviews, Book Club, so many great additions on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and your support of Post Wrestling on top of it. So we are going to continue and head on over to your feedback.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.